Thank you for joining us today for this event. This is the second session in the day. We are moving the focus a bit to cluster management and cluster planning, specifically planning. And with us today is Shako. I'm Cal. Shako.
Shako Daniel. I'm actually with the Service Fabric team, of course, and I deal mainly with the cluster management pieces of it and the overall Service Fabric service, which you see in Azure.
So basically, you're the guy responsible for the stuff that you're going to talk about.
Yes.
All right. So that's right. Good for the people.
Let's start. And so I want to start with trying to list out some of the complaints and some of the feedbacks I've received from the cluster administrators and other DevOps people who are managing clusters, and how difficult or how stressful it is to have a right cluster running at the right capacities, and also get the right amount of cogs out of it. So the some of the questions which I've got basically, or the comments I've got, are like, I'm always worried about us running out of capacity. I'm not sure if all the VMs are being used to the fullest capacity, or what if I have a new application to be deployed and I come to know about it at the very last moment. And the last one, of course, is the security, of course, is I'm always worried that my cluster might get compromised with because of a new threat and so forth. How do I make sure that I can do something so that it doesn't happen? And then the other one, which is a very big feedback for us, was the cluster version, which runs in your cluster. So how do I, as a cluster administrator, make sure that I am always in control as to what runs? And so there may be some other environments where it's okay for an automatic upgrade versus not. So I'll just go through all these.
Just to make sure that we understand what cluster version is, you're talking about the Service Fabric platform version.
Correct.
All right. Correct. Good.
So the best practice, actually, so the way I've thought about this is just divide all your problems into three buckets. So that's the very best thing to do. So one, take your time to plan your cluster capacity. It is not something which you can change, make changes on the fly. That is not a very good practice to do. You just have to be very thoughtful about how much of resources you're consuming, why you're consuming, what ports you're open, and why they're open, what's the traffic coming in, what's going out. That's a very important thing from a planning perspective. The second thing is, once you have that, how do you make sure that your cluster is secure and no traffic coming in or out is unauthorized? So that's something which you have to think about. The last one, of course, is the cluster version. The reason cluster version, or the Service Fabric version which runs on your cluster, some people also call it the system version. You at all times need to be sure of, is that the right version running? Is that something which is going to jeopardize my applications? Will it have downtime if something new comes in? Have I tested my applications against a new version? So those are the three big buckets which you have to think about. You as a cluster administrator certainly may not have access to all your applications, but certainly you can have a gate which says, I need to make sure that something, whatever you're deploying into it, is compatible with the version which is running. So that's the three big buckets which you will try to focus on, and then talk to you about best practices around each of them. Okay, so let's talk about the very first bucket, which is the cluster fabric, Service Fabric cluster planning. So very first thing is, cluster planning, capacity planning is not an easy exercise. You have to plan it. You have to take the time to understand as to what your cluster is going to be used for. It is certainly not a one-time exercise. You have to react to your cluster capacity based on your loads which you have on your application, or if the loads are reducing, then reduce them, of course. And the second piece of it is, if you're allowing customers or your devs to go deploy, or even yourself deploying new applications into it, revisit the cluster planning. Make sure that there are enough resources for the applications to be running successfully in your cluster. Then do not assume that you can add capacity instantly. That's not something which in Azure is not very easily possible. So plan your capacities. Maybe you should think in terms of, maybe when it's 25% headroom, or maybe 10% headroom, leave that headroom alone. And when you see your capacities have reached that point, add more. So that means it doesn't become a crisis. You don't get called at 2 in the morning.
I like the fact that you're referring to it as resources. You're not using the word compute or storage exclusively. So what kind of resources people should plan?
Okay, so I'll actually go through that. Basically, when I go through the cluster itself, I'll go through all the 8 or 9 uh-huh. resource types of resources which we'll consume.
Right.
And then we can talk about it. If you want a list, I can certainly give it to you now.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the very top of it, we should think in terms of, okay, what is that our cluster is running on? Actually, is VMSS. That's virtual machine scale sets. Each of these virtual scale sets needs IP addresses, which is from the networking team.
Mm-hmm.
It needs a load balancer, which also happens to be from the networking team. It needs some XTOR storage for storing the VHDs.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are a couple of other XTORs which we use, one for logs, one for applications, logs and so forth. And then we use a VNet, which comes from networking as well to interconnect these machines uh-huh. or VMs. And then you'll also see a resource called Service Fabric Cluster itself. So these are the high level, these are the ones you will see on a default cluster.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a secure cluster, of course, you have certificates which are in the key vault.
Mm-hmm.
You would see NSGs, which are network security groups. We'll talk some about them as well. And if you're one of those paranoid people who want to have an RDP box, then of course there's an extra VM as well. So these are the things which you have to plan for. But most of the things which I just talked about does not change very often, except for the compute capacity itself. And making sure that you have enough cores. So that's something which you need to have in your subscription.
All right.
So one of those things which I have always talked to our customers is make sure that you try to ask yourself some questions. So here's some of the questions which you can start to ask yourself before you put up a cluster. One, just make sure that you understand what is this cluster used for. Is it used for test? Is it used as a part of the continuous integration pipeline? Is it for production? So on the right, actually, on this screen, I have the CI/CD pipeline, which talks about there are 3 clusters which I own, for example. One is test, one production, and another one is pre-production. So this is just the best practices which I've seen in a lot of large custom installations. They have 3 distinct environments, and they guard each of them with different certificates. There are different protocols. Some people don't have access to production. Some of them do, and so forth. And then they have tied it together using CI/CD. There is actually a talk later on focusing on CI/CD. So some of it will be covered there.
Uh-huh.
But you as a cluster administrator, if that's the persona which you are thinking about, you should actually think about what is this cluster, the specific cluster which you're talking about or planning capacity for. What is it going to be used for? That's very important. That's the very first question you should ask. The second thing is, where is it hosted? Service Fabric actually has lots of offerings which cover from Azure to on-prem to any other cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So based on where you are, you may have to think, there may be some infrastructure related concepts which you have to think about. Like when Cal asked me about what resources are we used, I gave him an answer which is relevant for Azure.
Yeah.
So that may not be entirely true for when it comes down to an on-prem cluster. So there may be some aspects of it which are different. Like for example, you might have a FY load balancer, which is not what you have in Azure. So those are things which you have to think about. And then when it comes on-prem, you have to also think about physical security. Is my building accessible to the right set of people and so forth? So those are things we should think about. So this question which you're thinking about, where is it hosted, is a very important question. The next one, depending on which industry you are, all these differ. Like for example, there may be compliance expectations from the infrastructure which is not uniform across. Say for example, if it's an education system, which is entirely different from a healthcare application, from a cluster which is hosting healthcare.
Yeah.
You may need to think in terms of role-based access control, which is end-to-end, trying to think about what access does Cal have to my cluster. So it's a very important thing to talk about and think about. And then auditing, is certificates fine to use or certificates needs to be augmented? Are you rolling your certificates? What is the process of rolling and how does it impact? When do you do it? And so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So these are 3 big questions which I always expect a customer to ask themselves. So these are the ones which are on your screen. You can see them, and I just walk them through as well. Then once you now have got the infrastructure out of the way, you now have to think in terms of what is that I'm going to use this cluster for? For each of these applications which you'll deploy, first of all, you should be very clear. You should have a clear understanding of what kinds of applications are deployed, specifically around how much of state. So this is an interesting word. Let me explain what I mean by state. Okay. So before Cal asked me the question, I should ask. So service fabric. So service fabric actually supports two kinds of applications. One, in the intro, Mark talked about it. One is the stateless application, like you would think in terms of having the state which is stored externally, or it doesn't have any state.
Externally to the cluster.
To the cluster. Right. It could be in a SQL database. It could be an X store. It could be wherever you want it to be. Or it could be a file store as well, if that is what you want to do. So this assumes that there is some state which you would store because you have a stateful application in the cluster itself. So the file size or the VM should have enough capacity so that you can store that state. And then the second thing is number of instances or number of this application you want. So that means that might impact your amount of CPU left, amount of RAM left. So that's capacity. That's the thing you should think about. The third one is if you are a stateful application as a service, then you should think in terms of how many replicas are you keeping. It makes a lot of difference when it is a three replica set versus five or a seven. You're just doubling, tripling the amount of storage you need on the box. So that's something you should think about as well. And I'm not saying that it is on every individual box. It's just basically when you calculate, you're just calculating for the entire cluster, and Service Fabric takes care of load balancing it, as long as you report capacities for it. The next piece, which is very important as well, is the ports. What ports does every one of these services need open? Okay. Inbound or outbound?
Okay.
I'll be very clear on that one. So I would say take notes on all these. Then there are services which are IO bound. So then there you have to be more, you have to understand what is the IOPS needed from this cluster. A lot of times that is the one big piece which will drive whether what kind of skew in terms of what VMs you use, what kind of backend X store you use. So the IOPS if you're IO bound, and there are a lot, so then that's something which you should think about as well. And then we talked about external state versus internal state, and then the growth rate. So the growth rate is an important factor to figure out if your cluster needs to grow or shrink on demand, or is it something static, or are you trying to think in terms of growing, adding new clusters when you need, rather than adding machines. So that's why the growth rate is important. And then the next big piece is, like, for depending on how you set up your applications, an application may have a front-end service and a back-end service. Back-end typically doesn't take any traffic. So it's best to put them on nodes which don't have any traffic from outside coming in. It's a best security practice. So that's why we should do it. And the front-end can be another node type where you have load balancers where you're open the traffic to come in. So that's something which you should think in terms of that as well. So if whenever there's a new application which is planned to be deployed, you ask all the same questions again.
Okay.
And that's how you stay ahead of all the crises and the nightmares which are of part of our
especially life. With Christmas coming and people have their own apps running, and load will spike for those doing e-commerce. You really want to spend Christmas at home, right?
Yes.
So you plan ahead. I do have a question for you before we move on, because I think a lot of people online have said that they're talking about, why do I need to do capacity planning if everything is elastic and I can add it on demand? And hey, it's cloud, sort of. I should be able to do that. So maybe it's worth taking just a minute or so talking about why capacity planning is important even when you have this elastic support built in.
Fair. So I think I'll rephrase the question a little bit. So maybe the question is VMSs, which is what we are using our infrastructure on, what infrastructure is based on, supports auto scale. So why on earth should I be planning so much? And when like your example of Christmas coming in, it should just dynamically grow and shrink as needed. So in theory, that actually is true. So today there's one feature which we are trying to enable, which is called durability. Durability is our integration with our fabric controller at the back end. so that then it is not a slow process. You still have to wait for the VMs to show up. So that is not something which you can do anything about. So unless we get to another offering where you are not thinking about VMs, you will always have to have sort of pseudo-elastic. So it's not instantaneous. It still will add, mm-hmm. but you have to add it well in time, well in advance. Mm-hmm. So don't wait till 99% of capacity utilization to add one,
okay.
because provisioning of VMs can fail. There could be hiccups. Maybe you run out. You don't know that you have run out of cores and so forth. So that feature about durability, the value of silver is coming. And once that is the case, then all your VMs, which we'll support, will have this capability of very close to being an true auto scale. Till then, I appreciate the question that. Being in cloud, you're not thinking in terms of infrastructure or VMs, mm-hmm. but you, given the current scenario, you should. Even later on, you have to plan for the very fact that you own the VMs.
Yeah.
Once you own the VMs, there are some responsibilities which come with that. So that's the reason you should think in terms of that. And if you're trying to think about on-prem, think about the other things. You have to also plan for your purchase cycle, which is something you don't do
in
Azure.
Yes.
So you just basically pay for it. So hopefully that answers the question. All right, so now that you've figured out what CPU, RAM, disk you need, so now you're ready to have some selections of what kind of SKUs can I think about. I touched on the state durability, it's gold versus silver. Mm-hmm. All that means basically is those are two fabric controller integration points which we have with System Fabric. Fabric controller happens to be the system way beneath us, which actually is the one which controls as to what kind of operations gets performed on the raw machines and the guest VMs. So that's the reference to Fabric Controller, and Service Fabric do not own it. There's another team which owns it. We have an integration with it, and so we can safely move your replicas over, or create another replicas, or create another instance. So we are able to gracefully do some shutdowns as needed, and that's why the durability is very important. Gold happens to be the one which is the most powerful one in terms of the duration of time you have to make all these safety procedures or processes. That gives you 2 hours, and silver would be half an hour, and it'll be available on all the D-series VMs. So that's something which we are planning to bring out pretty soon. So we're still working on it. And when that happens, your auto scale will be far more seamless.
Mm-hmm.
Reliability, of course, just means that how many system services you run, system service replica set count you're going to run with. That's what that one is. And then the fault tolerance. I'll spend some time on fault tolerance. That actually is a key concept, and I've had a lot of customers ask questions on it, and they're not very clear on how do they even think about what kind of failures they should think about. What is the difference between a fault domain FD and a upgrade domain? So I'll touch on that. So the very first thing, how many fault domains do you need? So in Azure, fortunately or unfortunately, you don't get to choose. You always get 5. For a production cluster, we always said that there has to be a minimum of 5 machines. All these 5 would be in 5 fault domains. So that is not something which you get to choose at all. And neither do you get to choose UDs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just going to walk through the concepts with you only because this is something which you should understand.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, when you are thinking in terms of planning your own machines or your own data centers, or for test purposes and so forth, you can think in terms of those. And also plan, when you think of disaster recoveries, what should be the factors you should think about. That's why I'll go through these things. So FDs are unplanned failures. How do you survive an unplanned failure?
Mm-hmm.
UDs are planned failures, which you are orchestrating, like an application upgrade or a service fabric upgrade.
Mm-hmm.
Those are things which goes UD by UD.
Or OS upgrade, right?
OS upgrade, once we support it, once we have a solution, it will go through UD by UD. Yes, so that is true. Anything which a human initiates is what I would think, or a human process initiates would be go. It should honor UDs to be safe. Okay. Any questions that you have?
No, okay. Nothing. I do have a question about documentation on capacity planning, but I know there are some docs, so I wanted to answer this at the end with like references, and probably our team outside can help by providing the links on the chat. But other than that, I'm keeping an eye.
So I do have a capacity planning doc, and certainly that link we can provide. And also, the end of this deck, maybe when if we share the deck out, we can have all those links as well. So all right. Perfect. All right, so let's go on to how do you choose a fault domain? So as I said, basically the fault domains are the headroom you need in case there is an unplanned failure. So unplanned failures are basically truly physical failures. That could be that the top of the rack is down for maintenance. Mm-hmm. That just means that most of the rack is gone. Or the power unit just died. Mm-hmm. So those are the things which you want to survive on. And that is what I would call as the unplanned failures. And how do you survive that? And that is what is the factors which go into the fault domain discussion. In terms of capacity, this is the best practice which I would recommend is you should absolutely allow one of the FDs to go down. That is what you'll have to plan. That means your capacity, for example, if you have five fault domains, you should assume that your application must run even if one FD goes down. Mm-hmm. That is something which is important. That actually would mean that the Service Fabric software will move your instances out of that FD and then move it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Or if there is enough space for another replica, it will create it. Most of the time, if you're running with five replica target count, then it's okay for you to lose one FD and then you'll still be surviving because there'll be four other replicas running. Mm-hmm. So you'd be okay. So that's something which you should plan for. I didn't know that I had a. So this is what happens. So
yes.
There you go. And then so this is what happens as a L. So and then you're safe. And since you actually left enough of room on top, so there were replicas which could be moved, and in that way there was no issues.
And that goes back to the capacity planning. And the key information you said now is allow your cluster, one of the fault domains, to actually fail, right?
So you plan for that to fail.
Yes.
It may never fail.
Hopefully it will never fail. But the truth of the matter is it's a computer, it's a hardware, and it's bound to fail at some point of time, right? You may witness it or not. So planning ahead is part of what we do. And this has nothing to do with capacity in terms of elasticity. This is really something that you have to plan for ahead.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
And then so if you're in Azure, just some caveats. If it's, for example, a PDU or a Tor maintenance, so Fabric Controller absolutely will move your VMs over.
Mm-hmm.
So that is not something that is, that becomes a planned maintenance. This is truly when something just burns out. So there's nothing a software can do to prevent it. And that this is just avoiding a catastrophe which you may have. So certainly plan for it. Now let's talk about how do you choose the upgrade domains you need. So upgrade domains is to survive a planned downtime. Whether it is because of a failure or because of an upgrade which is going on, whatever those things would be. So the two examples which I gave you was the application upgrades and the Service Fabric upgrades. Those of them absolutely go on a UD by UD.
Mm-hmm.
And the one which we just talked about, when there is a Tor maintenance which is happening, then Fabric Controller will also do a UD walk.
Okay.
And through the durability settings which we have, we get notified, and then we have the opportunity. We, the Service Fabric service, has the opportunity to move your replicas over.
Mm-hmm.
So in both the cases, UDs are important. So I think I have some animations on it. Say, for example, there is an SF upgrade, Service Fabric upgrade going on in UD 9. So once the upgrade is going on, this is now the Service Fabric version which is going to be changed. So that particular node, which happens to be the green, one of the green ones, is going to go down. And so before it goes down, basically, we are now going to move your replicas over. Mm-hmm. And so then basically your service doesn't lose any availability, and then things look fine. So let's wrap up this by talking about the capacity headroom you would need. So and what you should plan for. Mm-hmm. So very first thing, we talked about, yes, you need to be able to survive one FD.
Okay.
You also need to survive one UD failure.
Okay.
Because you're going to have some planned upgrades going on. Mm-hmm. Then at random, so you're running on commodity machines. So there is a possibility that you will lose one. Those are the three things you should absolutely plan for being down, and you should have enough capacity for your replicas to move around, mm-hmm. or instances to be placed elsewhere. So that's something which I would say is the best practice for capacity.
All right.
Make sense?
Yes.
All right. So now we are going to switch into the cluster setup itself. Now that you have the capacity all planned up, you're ready to create a cluster. So now this is the biggest questions come up. Where the heck do I get my ARM template from? So everyone loves ARM. So certainly they want to start from somewhere. No one wants to write JSON from scratch. So my strongest recommendation is Service Fabric is maybe one of the rare offerings which we have. You actually can go to the portal and use that as a template generator. Unless you are going to use like more than three node types, which mm-hmm. is typically not the case with most of the customers, you can go to the portal, just customize the heck out of what you need. Just write in English or answer questions.
Yeah, but people come from all walks of life. So is this something you're saying I should do if I'm new to Service Fabric?
I would say even if you're a veteran to Service Fabric, if you're creating a new cluster, uh-huh. I would say start from there. The reasons are two things. Yes, we do have sample templates which we are published in the template gallery.
Uh-huh.
So certainly you can start from there and try to understand it. That means someone has to explain to you, here are my node types, here's the SKU, here is exactly the variable I'm going to change, and so forth. Certainly you can do that.
Okay.
Or I would say you can just go to the portal, create it there, because behind the scenes there is a template generator which I use for generating the template anyways. And then we keep the template generator current. Say for example an API changed or a new feature is added. Like for example, you have an existing cluster, for example, which you had since last year's build. And you've saved off that.
That was the case actually, right?
Yeah. So you would see that our API versions have changed. Mm-hmm. And unless you were very, very fastidious about making sure that changed, you would not know that there are some new features which came in and doesn't work. And I have customers who says, oh, I can't select version, the Service Fabric version, and they forgot to change the API version on top. So those are things which you have to maintain. And certainly for a running cluster, I would think you have to maintain.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're starting on a new cluster, I would strongly recommend go to the portal and then work through the UI. I'll show you one very quickly if I have time, yes. And then I'll just touch on certain areas which you should focus on and what you can do there.
All right.
Okay. All right. So best practices, customize your cluster. We talked about that. Then VMs, sort of initially when we started off, our VMs use VHDs, and these VHDs came from 1x store. So we figured out that even if it's a small cluster, it's best for DR reasons to fan out your IOs and protect against 1x store getting down. So if you look at the newer templates, whether it's from the template gallery or from the portal, even for a 5-node cluster, we give you 5x stores.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just a variable. So you can, if you are one of those people who says, hey, I'm never going to increase my cluster size beyond certain, maybe 10 or so, then you can reduce the number. Mm-hmm. And so that's up to you to reduce the number of X stores we use. Otherwise, default will be 5. So that's how, and then it allows you to expand your cluster to say 100 nodes in one VMSS. So your cluster can have up to 300 if you don't create it from the portal. Or if you're custom coding it, it can be any number. There's no real limit to it. Then the second thing is, once you have a cluster running, try not to use implicit commands. Implicit commands would be like going to VMSs and saying, directly do a put command against that particular resource
mm-hmm.
to say, I want to change or add a new drive or attach or maybe make some changes to it, whatever the properties of the VMSs are. So when you do that, basically you lose track of your configuration. So I would just say always as best practice, change your baseline ARM template, mm-hmm. and then deploy the template.
Okay.
ARM allows you to do diff anyways. So it is not that you will lose your existing cluster. It just basically, whatever is the change will be applied. So that's something which I talk about in one of our documentation. So certainly we'll have that in there. One of the last ones which I have on this particular slide is be very pedantic mm-hmm. on your configurations that you deploy into your production environment. The reason is very simple. At 2 a.m., you're really not thinking straight. You want to go back, look at what is deployed.
Mm-hmm.
And if there is no easy way to do that,
mm-hmm.
the first thing you're spending is another hour discovering what the heck is deployed. You might try to reconstruct stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's all painful. Just follow the rigorous process of making sure your configurations are well understood and they're saved off where you can find them. So that's the best practice in my opinion.
Okay.
All right, so one of those other things which are very interesting to me is, this is a topic which has come up multiple times as well from customers who are very large, who are running more than 100 node clusters, or maybe 40, 50 node clusters as well. So the very first thing we talked about is, yes, if depending on the number of ports you want to open and the kinds of accesses you want for a certain application, you can choose to put them in different node types, mm-hmm. certainly. Then I'm also suggesting that if you are running a business where you know that it's a large amount of nodes your cluster has anyways, I would recommend that you put the service fabric, the primary node type, be dedicated only for system services.
Mm-hmm.
So this helps in two ways. One, system services are one of the services which you care about, basically because they are the heart of the system. So you don't want to overwhelm them with unpredictable workloads or starve them of CPU cycles or RAM. So in large clusters, that can happen. Like, think in terms of the number of health reports you generate. Even if you say I generate one every 5 minutes, and if you generate it for every instance, every replica, it's a large volume of traffic which is hitting the cluster manager. So those are things which essentially does affect your performance of your cluster. So if it turns out that if it's like a large cluster, like a 200, 300, 400 node capacity, I would recommend that you have 7 nodes dedicated for Service Fabric. This helps.
Right.
And our experience with our internal customers have been that they have better served when they have done that. There is no real, like from a pure technical perspective, there's no need.
Mm-hmm.
This is just from an efficiency and a cluster planning perspective, yes. as a best practice.
Also, I'm guessing your second reason is the security of the system services. So you isolate them on one node type, their own VMs, and they remain somehow opaque to everybody.
Correct. Mm. Not many customers, and there is really no reason for anyone to touch them outside the cluster administrator.
Yes.
And that's certainly another reason, isolation. Okay, so now that I've talked a lot about custom ARM template generation, let me show you one.
Demo time.
So we'll do a 2 node type, and we will also use the portal for it. So I should have started. So this is what happens when you practice something. So you're here. So let me just close all these things down here. So you go say new. Service Fabric cluster coming up. There you go. So just do create. So here's the interesting part. A lot of customers are getting tripped up on what kind of core capacity do you need.
Mm-hmm.
So there, what you need is the VMSS capacity. Having the single instance VM capacity doesn't do you any good here. So you have to have that. And then depending on the SKU which you want, like for example, there is a capacity difference between an A series and a D series VM. And we recommend you use D series. So customers get tripped up at that point. And currently, I think there are some checks to check against the core capacity. Otherwise, you'll have a deployment time failure. So make sure of those before you get in there. So let's best practice. Here you can choose whether it's you want a Windows or a Linux. If it's Linux, you get an Ubuntu VM at the backend. And then Windows, you get a 2012 R2 at this point. We have currently not started to support 2016 from the portal yet. That's going to start coming up. It's in preview, so certainly you can, once 2016 is GA'd, we would support them. That's the problem right here. To choose one thing, I will not go through all the fields because the main intention was to show you how a custom configuration can be done. So we talked about node types. Okay. So 90% of customers do not have more than 3 node types. So that's why we've made a decision that 3 is fine here. Mm-hmm. But if there is a feedback which says, no, I have majority of them are 5, it's a small thing for us. We can actually change this. As far as for this thing, I'll just say 2 and then basically choose one, which is the front end. And then here's the durability, which I was talking about. Today, only bronze and gold are there. There's a silver coming in soon. And here, depending on which region you are, this list will change. For our purpose, let's just choose the first one. Mm-hmm. The key difference, if you look at this one, there is some confusion customers have in terms of D1 versus DS1. So DS actually has very little hard drive or the local SSD storage. This one, 50 gigs. DS would be 8. Okay. Unless there is a specific reason for you to use those DS SKUs because you're either IO bound or something, or you need far more IOPS, I would recommend sticking to these. Mm-hmm. So you can choose any one of these, or depending on what kind of CPU you need, you can have more. So I'm going to take for this purpose the D1. Reliability just means that the number of system services replica set count, that's all it is. You can do that, of course. I'm not going to go into configurations. Mm-hmm. The next one, so backend, I'll do the same. Oh, this is the other thing. So what is interesting observation I have from the little telemetry which we get from the services is there are a lot of 10 node clusters. I've never seen a 7 or 6 or 5.
It's a good number.
It's a great thing for Azure. But I'm just saying that you actually, only the first one has a limit of 5. You can actually reduce this to 4, what was required. So hopefully now I will not lose revenue, but I just want to let you know that that's something which you can do.
So you can do 9 and you can do 7 and you can do,
Yes, you can add 15 as well.
All right.
So the next one is for application diagnostics. Custom fabric settings is another big topic which we'll not cover. So this is something which I want to touch on. Basically the fabric versions of it itself. So here, this is how you select whether it's what upgrade mode you want to be in, whether you want to automatic or you want it to be manual.
Yes.
Manual would mean that now you are responsible for upgrading your cluster. Mm-hmm. There's actually a documentation on how to do it, but this is how you select. And then in this list, basically you can choose the latest one or the one which your application has been compiled against, or the SDK which you compiled basically. And choose one.
So what's the guidance on choosing manual or automatic in this case? I remember you telling me a good story around that.
Yes.
Like when you're Christmas time, make sure it's so, but if it's downtime, make sure it's so. So can because I think that pretty much makes the story, gives a context to this that particular selection.
Yes, absolutely. So if I were designing a cluster and if I owned a production service, I would rather, if I have 3 clusters, say test, pre-production, and production.
Okay.
Production is one I would absolutely make it manual.
Right.
Mainly because I want to know when, and I want to be involved as to when it goes to the next version.
Mm-hmm.
And that allows me to do 2 things. One, if my application is misbehaving, even if it's healthy, there's no way Service Fabric will know that if your application logic is failing or not.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you put some more runners behind the scenes or watchdogs behind the scenes. So that is one. Second, if there are cases where in production you feel that you're comfortable, you're not changing your application for a long time, and you're one of those people who adopts the Service Fabric SDKs on like every time it comes out, then it's okay to leave your production in automatic.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there are times when you know there's a peak load, like the Christmas times, which you just talked about. You just want quiet time on your cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just turn that into manual. And then once January or February comes along, switch it to automatic. So then you don't have to get up and be concerned about it. So that's what I would think. In test, I would strongly suggest that keep it as automatic, because you want to get hit with the problems up front in test rather than in production.
Mm-hmm.
So for test, I would say make it automatic. PPL, you can choose depending on how much of rigor you put into pre-production. So whether you can put it, if you say it's equal to production, then I would keep it manual, because you don't want to get woken up at night for a PPL thing. So that's what you will do. All right, so security, yes, you absolutely. So most likely we'll get rid of this unsecure business out here, because it's a lot of security reasons why you should not have it. So I'm assuming by the time you get here, you already have. So I'm just going to quickly do this, because I think we are close to time. No, wrong one. Certificate thumbprint. Okay, so I will skip the AAD part at this point. So otherwise you can actually have your. So now I have the template, the validation is passed. So basically the basic validation, which it does, is basically takes the template, runs it with a slash validate. And at that point is just basically checking if all the syntaxes are right, or if there are core issues and so forth, like to flag at this point. And behind the scenes, there is a resource group which gets created. So there is a possibility that if you now take the same template and then say, I'm going to deploy it again, you will hit a resource group creation issue.
Yes.
But I think that's a small thing. So let's just look at this downloaded template. It will have, here it is. So let me just use this itself. It's okay. So at this point, here's a customized template, which now has, here's the cluster. All right, so this is not very helpful. Let me copy it so it's easy, and then I'll walk you through this very quickly. I'm using a third party tool, so because it's easier to visualize in this. So it uses 12 resources. The one which I want to focus on today would be the cluster. I'll come back to it. Then there is virtual machines, so there will be two of them, which you will see up front. I think it will be here. So that's another virtual machine. And then there is all the networking stacks which you have here, load balancers and IP addresses and so forth. And then there should be XTORs here as well. So I'll let you go through each of these to have a better understanding. So today we will not go through them. The one thing I want to focus back on is the cluster itself, which I think is important. If you go to properties, you'd see a lot of what you just entered here. So for example, the certificates which you entered would be here. This is the certificate store which was entered and so forth. And you can go through all these. So one thing which I want to go in here is, here's the parameters for the security, and here's the management endpoint for it. And the fact that we chose a reliability of silver, it's here. And then here is the config for upgrade mode. This is manual.
Mm-hmm.
If it were automatic, then this will say automatic. And then you will also not have the cluster code version.
Yeah.
So we specifically chose manual and then chose that. And that's how you change from being a automatic upgrade mode versus manual. If it's automatic, you could just remove this particular version thing and then switch it to, or switch this value to automatic. Otherwise, it's manual. So this is, in a way, now I have a customized template stored in a safe place. It also gives you if you say download, it'll download and see this is what you get. So it comes with a script you need to deploy. Here is the template itself. Mm-hmm. This is what we just went through. Mm-hmm. Here's the parameters which you can use, and then give it customized parameters you need. So for example, this is what I just filled out, and everything is in here. So I say like the DNS value. So the cluster name which you give is what we use for DNS. So mm-hmm. you will see all these things which we have done. It doesn't mean that you have to use the same values. You can change it to what makes sense for you. But here's the parameters which goes into the template. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So now let's go into the next big bucket which we have to address. This is mm-hmm. the cluster security. So we just did this. So best practices for cluster security. One, do not do unsecure clusters. It is a disaster waiting to happen.
It's classic.
Yes. So although there is an option like that in the portal, the only reason we have that in the portal is to facilitate some random testing, or I can't think of any great reasons for it. It was basically an ease of use because of various things. But I would say never use it for production purposes or even anything which you value about. Next one, adopt or add network security groups. This allows you to create demilitarized zone versus militarized zone. Mm-hmm. And you don't want any traffic. I would treat my cluster as a militarized zone. Mm-hmm. You don't want any traffic in or out unless it has been authorized. So use NSGs. I actually have, I'll have a template I'll walk through, and then maybe we'll provide it as a sample as well. And the last one, which I think I've seen some of the big companies use, basically it's a very old concept called jump boxes. That means that I cannot perform any management operations on my cluster unless you are physically logged on to a cloned machine. So that's now taking it to the other extreme, where you're saying that not only do you need to have access to the cluster, you also need to have access and credentials to the jump box. So certainly you can do that too. So that sample will contain all the three. Mm-hmm. So here is what my illustration of what I was just talking about. So as a default, this is what you get. You have a Service Fabric cluster, which is the green, the larger one, and there's a VNet. The reason I have this VNet stitching to the side is because you can bring your own VNet, or you could use that VNet for something else as well. Mm-hmm. But certainly for every one of the VMSs which we deploy, or the node types which we deploy, it actually has its own subnet. Mm-hmm. within the VNet, it allows you for connectivity purposes. It has its own load balancer as well. There may be questions which you may be asking, why do I need a load balancer for a backend? It is not because you need one. It's basically, it gives you the flexibility to have one, and then you can turn all the probs off. You still need internal communication, and the only place where you define these things are the load balancer. So now what I'm suggesting is, let's secure it. When you secure it, of course, you're going to use Key Vault and AAD. And on the right side, in the green, is the Azure storage, which you would see here. For diagnostics, SF logs, and for VHDs, of course. And I said for VHDs, make sure that you have as many as 5, so that each of them, so you're better off that way to avoid some of the disasters. Add an NSG. So basically, what we're saying here is NSGs are allows you to control the traffic going in and out, and there will be one NSG per VMSS. So that's what we will do. Mm-hmm. And then the jump box, which is sitting outside. And so that has to be part of the VNet for connectivity purposes. Otherwise, then you have to now tunnel in a access point for the jump box. So mm-hmm. best practice would be to put in the VNet itself as a part of the same subnet, which one of them is using, or maybe elsewhere. So that's fine too. Mm-hmm. All right, so of course, that leads me into the next question, of course, is what ports do I open? Right, some of it is documented and was documented before, and now I think I have documented it officially as well, and I'll have it here shared with you as well. So most of the customers are familiar with client connection endpoint, that is a TCP endpoint. Mm-hmm. Next one is a HTTP endpoint. Then the people who are not aware of, or surprise a lot of people, is that we do use SMB as well, which is 445 and 135. That's for image store purposes, which is the backend service which we provide. Then the SFRP, which is our RP at the front end, also talks to the cluster using that 9025. And then there is the rest of them, which you can look at. And these are the ones which you absolutely have to open in an NSG perspective. So this is the list. So let me show you one, and then I'll specifically focus on the NSG because we already talked about the rest. Yeah. So I'll just specifically talk about that. So I have it here. So the specific, so this is actually a three node type cluster. And then we will, so in here, of course, there are three NSGs, each one for each. And the one I will just focus on specifically is the one for our management node type. That's where the system services live. And that's just, I just happen to call it management. You can call it whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And then you see here is the network security group. So that actually is a new resource you're adding. And then in there, you are now trying to say what are the things which you would allow versus not allow. If you look at here's the HTTP gateway port, which I'm allowing, mm-hmm. allow. The priority itself, I think there is no real science to it. You just put order some number. Very, very yeah, good. Just order of execution, maybe that's what you're doing. And this is the TCP endpoint, 19,000. Mm-hmm. Then here's the cluster ports, which we talked about, the least connection endpoints, and so forth. So this is the SMB port. This is the RDP port. Yeah. So I'll let you guys look at that.
So I guess in conclusion, the principle is decade-old principle we're using here, which is compartmentalizing your cluster.
Yes.
Buckets, isolated buckets of nodes, management functions, and so on. And we're using Azure networking, specifically yes. subnets, VNet subnets, and NSG to do that.
Correct.
Okay. I think it's worth noting that you can do that on on-prem cluster as well using traditional routing rules and firewalls between nodes. So I think this is important to say because service fabric runs everywhere, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So we need to tell people like, yes, we use that for Azure, but you can use whatever else for any other cloud or your on-prem.
Absolutely. Okay. So the principles apply. So whatever we talked about so far, principles do apply to whether you're running in an AWS, you're running our cluster in Amazon, mm-hmm. sorry, in Azure, or your own data center. Absolutely, absolutely. Mm-hmm. This is the same principles which apply. So let's quickly go over why you have to think in terms of cluster version itself, since we have like a few minutes left. Mm-hmm. So one, we talked about the fact that the example we just talked about, Christmas coming and then its introduction. And a couple of, and there is actually a link which I have on the template. You can actually go in and take a look at that. And details of it is, it allows you to be in control of what runs on your cluster. That's the biggest reason for doing it. Otherwise, leave it automatic, it'll work. So some of the factors to consider and the best practices to think about is, what is the availability need of your service? What kind of predictability needs you have? Mm-hmm. What kind of code hygiene do you have? If it turns out that yes, you're always current on your versions, it's already tested and you're ready to go, I would say keep it automatic. If that's not the case, then think in terms of having your production in manual mode, and then taking that extra hit, which is worth it. So that's what I would think.
All right.
So any other questions which came in?
No, I think the rest of the questions we'll take care of offline, okay. Because we're running out of time for this session. You are around answering the questions on this list.
Yes, absolutely.
So are you ready to conclude?
Yes. So, okay, thank you for the time. This is awesome that I can come in and talk about these things, which have been a lot of questions on Stack Overflow and Discus, and also from our Yammer group, mm-hmm. and also meeting the customers. And these were the things, very high level pain points we had come up with. And then when you suggested, let's have a talk, here mm-hmm. we are.
All right. So thanks again for being here. And thank you guys for joining us. Please stay tuned for the next session, which should be in 10 minutes or so, right? Thank you.
Thank you.